Albert Breer, MMQB, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Albert, what's going on, man? How are you?
What's happening, guys? How we doing?
Good, man. Let's talk about the Titans and the Steelers. Obviously, there was another positive test. You know, while every other league's been affected, right, the NBA and the NHL had to go into bubbles. Baseball's had a ton of games canceled. College football's had a ton of games canceled. The NFL, it seems like they're the golden child on everything. They've been immune until now. What's the latest on when they may play that Steelers-Titans game?
You know, I think they want to play it on Monday and Tuesday. And the reason why, that was in the statement, the reason why is because, you know, they want it to be as little disruption to the schedule as possible. You know, and there's definitely an opening. I mean, we've been over this, like, where you can move the game to week 8, then move Ravens Steelers to week 7. You know, but I do think, you know, part of the equation here is you don't want to eliminate margin for error with any of the teams if you can possibly afford to avoid that. You know, and I think the other part of it is that, you know, it's unfair to the Steelers, right? Like, if you're saying to them, through no fault of your own, we're going to take your bye week away, because this won't really be a bye week for them if they were to move the game at this point, and make you play 13 weeks in a row coming out of this. You know, it's just, I think they're going to try to do everything they can to keep the game where it is. And they're going to be inequities if you do that too. I mean, both these teams play, you know, pretty tough opponents in week 5. You know, the Steelers play the Eagles and the Titans play the Bills. And so now you're going to be going into almost, you know, if you play the game on Thursday, almost like a Thursday night football scenario against a team that's going to be coming off of a full week of rest, you know? So is that fair? You know, there are lots of questions associated to this that I think are going to have to, you know, I just think be managed by all the teams. And, you know, we said at the start, like, there are going to be competitive balance issues. Like, there are going to be inequities. You know, and we're all going to have to accept at some point that this is just what we signed up for. And, you know, this is probably the first real example of that, I mean, individual players have faced it, but I think this is the first real example where, you know, an entire team or two is going to have to manage something that might not be on paper very fair.
Albert, how does the union feel about all these things, you know, with the practice and with COVID and these, you know, what's going on with the Titans?
Well, I mean, part of it, Dustin, is it's what they signed up for, too, you know. And so I think part of it is you just have to anticipate what you're going to be dealing with. And that's a big piece of this. You know, when they were talking through the protocols, and they did a lot of work, you know, over about a 6-week period in June and July, and really went right up to the beginning of training camp and trying to get everything right. There was the acknowledgement, we're going to have positive tests. There's a chance we're going to have postponements. And we're going to have to be ready for everything. And I think, you know, at least internally, the messaging was, this isn't going to be perfect, you know, and there are going to be points where it's going to be rickety, and there are going to be points where we're going to have to deal with it. And, you know, I think, like, if you asked anybody at the league or within the union that your first postponement was going to be in week 4, I actually think, you know, back in July, they would have taken that. And they would have said, we're probably doing a pretty good job if we get to week 4 without a single game being moved in any way. You know, and so, like I said, like, it's not ideal for the union. And, you know, they're going to be, I know what they've got their radar up for right now is, you know, you're keeping obviously symptomatic guys out of the buildings and doing the best they can to make sure that guys have as close to 4 weeks of practice as they can leading into the game. You know, but, you know, this is something that I think everybody was sort of prepared for going back to June and July when all those protocols were put into place.
Albert Breer, MMQB. Albert, let's go to the Browns, who, you know, have taken care of business against two bad teams the last 2 weeks in Cincinnati and Washington. The competition gets better against Dallas, although their defense stinks. And then, you know, Indy and Pittsburgh to follow in theory. You know, they've done it running the ball and stopping the run the last 2 weeks. Should Browns fans be very optimistic or slow down a little bit because of the opponents?
Well, here's what I would say. I think there's reason to be optimistic in that the areas they tried to address in the offseason do seem to have been addressed. And the kind of identity that I think Kevin Stefanski and his staff wanted to establish is being established. You know, and what I mean by that is you wanted to address your offensive line. You spent to hire an offensive line coach who I think is one of the best in the league over the last 25 years, of Bill Callahan, and you've gotten results there. The offensive line looks like a million times better than it did last year. That's allowed you to run the ball, which, you know, has allowed you to establish the identity that you wanted to. And that, quite frankly, has created a better environment for your quarterback. And so no matter what happens this year, I think if they can keep up what they've, you know, been able to establish the first 3 weeks, you're going to get a cleaner read on who your quarterback is than you did in year two. And so all those things are good. And will it hold up against better opponents? That remains to be seen. But I will say this, like going into that Dallas game, you know, right now it looks like you almost have to approach the Cowboys, and I'm not saying they're Kansas City on offense, but you almost have to approach playing them like you approach playing the Chiefs, right? Like, which is you want to shorten the game and try to limit the amount of possessions they have and protect your defense a little bit. And the Browns look equipped to do that. You know, they might have the best, you know, running back tandem in the league in Chubb and Hunt. They're able to establish that they've been able to go on long drives over the last couple of weeks. And so I do see some reason for optimism. And if the stuff that you've been doing the last 2 weeks holds up against the Cowboys, man, then you've got some momentum, you know, going into, I think, two more tests against the Colts and the Steelers.
If the Browns continue doing this and they're winning, but Baker's throwing, you know, 20 passes a game, do the guys on the outside stay content? Jarvis and Baker, are they going to be cool with that?
If you're winning, I think they'll be okay. Is the best way to answer that. I don't think Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry are bad guys. Like, I don't. What I know about them, though, and this has sort of been the way it's been for both of them over the course of their careers, is, you know, when there are winning situations and when you show them there's a reason why you're doing things the way you're doing them, and that way is producing results, like, logically, like, they're going to be okay. And I think that's sort of the way it was for Odell in New York. And it's the way it was for Jarvis in Miami. Where Jarvis and Odell, I think, were upset with their touches was when they didn't believe in what was going on and they weren't getting the ball. Because then it becomes, all right, like, well, if anybody here is capable of changing this, it's me. And so I don't understand why I'm not getting the ball. Do you follow what I'm saying there? So
yeah, for sure.
I just think a lot of it is, like, really is going to come down to, like, how those guys buy into what's going on, and I think the history of the offense, right? Like, because we all know what Kevin's doing there is, like, he's trying to establish, you know, I think the bones of, like, a Shanahan type of offense. That offense has great history across the league, especially of late. And it's not just Kyle. You see what, like, Matt LaFleur is doing in Green Bay right now. And we're starting to see signs of the Browns doing some of those things. And so that's reason right there to buy in. I think if you give those guys reason to buy in, then I think they're going to be okay. I think where you lose guys like that is if they look at it sideways and they say, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know why we're doing that. And, you know, because this doesn't work, you should just be giving me the ball. I do think, like, at least with, you know, a couple of these weaker opponents, they've been able to establish some of the stuff that they've been talking about internally for the last couple of months. And that really, really helps with keeping guys like that on board.
Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback with us. Albert, do the Bengals at some point have to consider – I feel almost stupid asking this question, but their offensive line is like a – is like an expansion team offensive line. What are they going to do? He's getting killed, Burrow.
I know. And I think that they're going to, I mean, like, I think it's really going to come down to doing a better job of protecting him scheme-wise. And look, like, I know Zach Taylor's trying. You know, like, they're, and really, I think so much of it, I'm pretty sure we talked about this last week, Adam, was, you know, like that, you know, it's going to be leaning on Joe Mixon and trying to play games in a phone booth a little bit. And I think one thing that's encouraging, I mean, like, look, like, AJ Green hasn't been good for the first couple of weeks, right? but we're starting to see some progress from T. Higgins. You know, Tyler Boyd can play. And so I think as, like, the young players start to develop and come along, you know, I think that that allows you to manage the issue you've got on the offensive line a little bit better. The good news is they do look like they've got one keeper in Jonah Williams at left tackle. The bad news is they've struck out on trying to fix, you know, other areas of that offensive line. And so, you know, it looks to me at least like something they're going to have to manage over the course of the next, over the course of the next 14 weeks. And it's not an easy thing to do, but if you're, you know, getting better at the skill positions and, you know, you're getting better production out of, you know, Joe Mixon and Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins is coming along, I do think it allows you to just manage the problem a little bit better.
Albert, the Chiefs are Lamar Jackson's kryptonite, it appears, because he can beat everybody else in the league, but he can't beat those guys. I mean, it's the first time his career threw for under 100 yards in that game. I shouldn't say is the book out on Lamar. Is there something the Chiefs are doing, I guess I should say, that's slowing him down? Because no one else can stop him, but the Chiefs defense can.
Yeah, they're taking leads. They're playing defense with their offense, so to speak. You know, like,
right.
I mean,
so he's making him throw. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that game, like if you look, like, and I did the math on this, like, because I rewatched. I went back on Tuesday. I rewatched it, and I'm like, I didn't even realize this while I was watching it. You guys realize at one point, like, that game, I think I have this right, because it was 27-10 at the half, right? Like, that game very easily, if it weren't for special teams, would have been 31-3, because they had the kickoff return, right? That was the only touchdown for Baltimore, and then the Chiefs had a missed field goal and a missed extra point. So really, like, logically, you look at it, that should have been 31-3 at the half. And it's not just the score, guys. It's like when the Chiefs get on top of you like that, I think there's a psychological effect to other teams where it's just like you almost feel like you have to score quickly, you know? And you do panicky things because you know I can't afford a field goal in this spot, you know? And I just think, like, you know, you watch the way the Chiefs are playing offense right now and kind of what Mahomes can do, I think it compromises things all over your team. So I don't think it's just the Ravens. I think it's, you know, if you get in that sort of situation where the Chiefs are really feeling it early, it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on everybody else. And so I think a huge part of that is, you know, if you take the Ravens out of their offense, now what's, you know, are they able to counterpunch? And, you know, it's we've seen it. Like, it's not something that complex. It's just, you get up on top of them and you force them out of what they like to do, and it gets them out of sorts a little bit. And so I don't know how the Ravens fix that. I know, you know, it's something that they've worked on, and they showed some signs of it in a situation. One was actually against the Browns at the end of the first half when Lamar let him down the field. So they've shown some signs that they've been able that they're going to be able to do it. But, you know, clearly when the chips are on the table against an elite team like Kansas City, we just haven't seen it yet.
Albert, you know, I've been asking everybody this lately because I'm curious what the answers are. And they're like, it's not a new story. We know Tom Brady, whatever. But I just, like, your job as an NFL evaluator is to get it right. Now, you're not always going to get it right. I just can't. And how does somebody look at Mitch Trubisky and Patrick Mahomes? And I didn't know any better, but that's not my job. Like, how does Mitch Trubisky get drafted before Patrick Mahomes? One guy might be out of the league in a couple of years. Mahomes might end up being the greatest quarterback we've ever seen.
I think it's a combination of things. You know, and I don't think it's specific to Trubisky so much as it's specific to Mahomes. Trubisky did a lot of NFL-type stuff in his 1 year starting at North Carolina, where you looked at him, and the weird thing with him is, like, he's sort of regressed on some of that, you know, like, where I remember hearing, like, oh, well, you can see him get to number three and number four in his progression, and then you get him to the NFL, and now all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, he can't get past number one, and if you get him past number one, he's going to run, and then you hit him. Like, that's the book on Trubisky now, which is crazy to think about, that he was doing it in college, but then it just, you know, it just hasn't clicked in the NFL. You know, but I think part of that is, you know, kind of figuring out who the kid is. Like, why didn't he start until his fourth year at North Carolina? Like, that's a fair question to ask. Yeah. You know, and so you understand why the miss happened on Trubisky, because he did see some NFL things, and there were some things under the surface that maybe were harder to detect. I think really what you can take from all of this is what the NFL can learn from missing on Mahomes. And I think the reason why so many teams missed on Mahomes, remember, it was 10 teams because the Bills were there too, and they traded out of the 10th pick. And the Browns were obviously one of those teams as well. You know, I think that the thing, they looked at him and said, okay, like, he's doing it in a very unconventional way. He's loose with the ball. He's doing all these things we haven't really seen before. And he's coming from an air raid offense where literally everybody puts up huge numbers, you know?
Right.
You had guys, like Cliff Kingsbury, who's the coach of the Cardinals now, was the first of these guys. And he put up, like, just video game numbers in college, you know? Graham Harrell, who's the OC out at USC, same thing. Like, there are all these guys who are, like, coaches now, you know, that put up just enormous numbers in that offense. I think it sort of made it so, like, if you saw something you weren't necessarily comfortable with as a scout, right, you could look at it and say, all right, like, this does not look like I'm used to. I'm not seeing a lot of NFL stuff here. He's doing all of this crazy stuff. I mean, you see the physical ability, and that's great. But I'm not. I don't see how this is going to translate to the NFL. He's loose with the ball. He runs all over the place. He's going to get hit. X, Y, and Z. And then how easy is that if you're a scout to extrapolate that and say, oh, and he's in the air raid, and no quarterback from the air raid ever works, right? Like, so it's like, if you're already uncomfortable with the guy to begin with, it's like then you add the fact that he's coming out of this offense, and it's very easy to say, well, you know, this guy's not going to make it. And so I think that it's just sort of, it's a credit to the Chiefs and Brett Veach and Andy Reid for having vision for what he could be. But, you know, I do think that there's a part of that where NFL people have to have a lesson to learn and say, we got to look at the individual and be able to look through, you know, what we might have as our own ideas of what a quarterback looks like. You know, and then also separate him from the sort of offense he plays in.
Albert, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.